Before we kick off this week's episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Blue Medora. Have you ever heard of the term monitoring integration as a service? Well, guess what? Blue Medora invented that. They have enterprise-grade integrations for IT monitoring, which will seamlessly stream metrics and logs from all kinds of different sources right into the monitoring platform that you already use. So it's good to have tons of metrics and logs and all that stuff for your application, but the data sets are siloed off from each other, and it's difficult to draw relationships and conclusions about performance and how different systems are interacting. And it's also really a pain to configure all those monitoring agents and getting all working together and set up in all your boxes. It just sucks, man. Blue Medora has a solution that's called Bindplane. It takes in the metrics and logs from over 150 different technologies, and they can be on-premises, hybrid cloud, or multi-cloud, and feeds them all right into your favorite monitoring tool. Things you already use, like Google Stackdriver, New Relic, Azure Monitor, Wavefront, and Datadog. This allows you to see how the components of your stack are interacting in real time and draw relationships between all those different metrics that previously were siloed off from each other. The end result is a single pane of glass view into the performance of your entire stack, and you don't have to spend time configuring monitoring agents or develop custom integrations for your application, anything like that. It also gives a real dimensionality to your metrics, allowing you to dig down and pinpoint performance issues before they become real problems. Now, they've got an awesome offer for DNC listeners. If you sign up at bluemedora.com/compute, they'll send you a $50 Amazon gift card for upgrading your monitoring with Bindplane. Turn your information into insight with Blue Medora. Sorry if you scared the dog.
The dog is in his kennel. He's in his crate. He's we tricked him. He likes these things that are good for his teeth, so we give him those, and then he's good for an hour in there.
Greenies?
Yeah, he's good for an hour in there.
Those are the best. Or pig ears. Pig ears, I know, are a big thing, although they can be dangerous, I guess, for chewing on as chew toys.
I've strayed away from like bones and stuff just in case. Obviously, like if you buy a bone from the store, like a pet store, it's not going to have any blood in it or a marrow or anything like that. But, you know, I just don't want him to like get used to seeing a bone and be like, oh, I want to eat that. Because what if we're at the park and someone has a fresh pork bone? And
what if?
No, it's like this. Like I go down to Seacliff right now, and there's probably people. So that's where I go. I take my solar panel and my computer down there and work. And Watson will be sitting there at the time to a post or something next to me, and he'll just pull bones out of the ground.
Can we back up for a minute?
Okay.
Because you've been sending me pictures of the, you know, I'm freezing my butt off here on the East Coast. You know, winter's coming and all that, and you're sending me pictures of what looks like, it looks like you're, I don't know, harvesting the sun. Like you ever play SimCity 2000? You remember how they have those microwave, are you watching Breaking Bad while you're working?
Yeah.
Dude, I can't watch something and work at the same time. It's way too much.
It depends on the work that I'm doing. It really depends on the work that I'm doing. And also I've seen it before a couple of times. I'm just watching it in preparation for what is El Camino.
That is a good call. That's a good call. Yeah. So SimCity 2000 had these microwave power plants where it's like they beam energy from space, and they're pretty clean and cheap, but until, you know, the laser beam strayed off and destroyed your whole city with a giant firestorm.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm familiar with that.
That's what this looks like. This is what that looks like. You look like a prepper out here with your, and you've got, not only do you have this giant fold-out solar panel, but you've got a battery pack that's about, it's about the size of like a motorcycle battery. It's like a lunchbox. It looks like a lunchbox.
Oh, it's smaller. Yeah, it's a small lunchbox. It's smaller than a motorcycle battery, definitely. But
I don't know, man. This looks like, you must get looks from people. Do people say anything or comment on it at all?
No, not yet.
I mean, I guess you're a NorCal. I guess that's par for the course.
Yeah. So I have my bike, and I just strap it. So I have a rack on the back of my bike. And so I'll just bungee strap it to the back of my bike when I'm riding. No one's really said anything yet.
This is I think this is ridiculous, and I also completely respect you for doing this and being able to work like this, because it is awesome.
So I mean, if you were here with me, you'd do it too. You would be down there with me probably.
You don't know me.
You would be down there too. But it's pretty cool. I'm harvesting the sun. So what I do is, I need a bigger solar panel, but I don't want to carry a bigger solar panel around with me. So I'll put links to these in the show notes, the specific things that I have. But I have a Jackery solar panel that's 60 watts. And we'll talk more about that in a second. And then I have a Jackery battery, which I don't know the actual specs on it. I just know that since upgrading from a 13-inch MacBook Pro to a 15-inch MacBook Pro, I can't use just a USB-C with power delivery charger. It just doesn't put out enough. So the Jackery battery that I have, I got that one specifically because it will power an outlet up to 150 volts. So I can plug my computer, my 15-inch MacBook Pro, into that, and it'll actually charge my computer up instead of making it drain slower, you know? So that's why I have these specifically. And if I time it right, what I do is I have my laptop at 100% and I plug the battery into it when my laptop's at 100. And if I have good sun, then the external battery doesn't drain. It keeps between 98% and 100%, because for some reason when my battery's charged, my laptop pulls less energy from the battery. So if I time it right and my laptop is fully charged when I get down there, I can basically work as long as the sun is around without things running down on me.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, that makes sense. If you're topping it off at 60 watts and, you know, like I'm with my iMac here with plus, you know, iMac 27 inch plus a 27 inch Thunderbolt display.
Right.
And that's only about like 120, 150 watts or something at idle. So like, I'm sure that when you're not under load, that's probably totally fine.
Yeah. So I guess the distinction there too is like if my computer isn't having to charge the battery and run at the same time, then the battery can keep powering my computer basically one-to-one. So the battery itself isn't like charging quickly. It's just putting out it's getting enough from the sun to run my laptop without having to charge my battery at the same time. So as long as my computer is 100%, it's good. Now, if it drops down below that, then it's like it doesn't recover. I can still get probably 5 or 6 hours outside with it, but it's not quite the same. Yeah.
That is pretty cool, though. Do you have any problem with glare? Like, that's my always thing with working outside is bugs and, like, glare, like not being able to see what I'm doing.
No. So the problems I have are you have to have shade. Okay. So Sea Cliff, where I go, has covered picnic tables that I can sit at. And so that solves the shade problem, because I would be burnt to a crisp if I didn't have that. The sun here feels to me way more intense, way more direct, I suppose, than when I was on the East Coast. So I burn way quicker here. And that, like, I learned that the hard way when I first moved to California, because the humidity was like non-existent. So I would be outside and then I'd be sort of in the shade and I'd feel cold. But my like feet were, if I'm wearing sandals, they're like in the sun and my feet just get fried so fast.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, you are quite a bit, actually, you're not really that much further south than Vermont, but.
Yeah, I don't know maybe what it is. Maybe it's the desert climate. I'm not a scientist. I don't know. I just know that I would burn really quickly. So yeah, sunscreen every day and have to find shade. I don't really have a problem with bugs down there especially, but my keyboard can get gummed up sometimes, like with the salty air, I guess. So that's a thing. And,
oh, that's no bueno.
Yeah, and if the wind's blowing, then, you know, you got sand in your ports. And if the wind's blowing, it kind of gets, like, hazy sometimes if, like, the fog is coming in. And so that kind of gums up the keyboard, too. But really, like, all things considered, those aren't terrible problems to have.
Just paying that fair weather tax, man.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about that. It's making me sad.
It's all right.
Me sad.
Let's talk about something that A is on our show notes and B won't make you sad.
Okay.
This is just a quick little nugget that I didn't get to mention last week because we ran off the rails with that other stuff. But I actually got a PR submitted into Phoenix Live View, which was... you know, this is like people who do open source. This is just like, whatever, this is another day. But for me, who doesn't do it as often as I should, wagging my finger at myself and everyone else who uses open source without contributing. I don't know. I just, there was a lacking element in the documentation for LiveView that wasn't explaining where what all those crazy like Phoenix attributes are, PHX dash whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of them, and I could never remember their names, and they're all scattered throughout the document. So I just threw them in a little table. It's already actually in 0.3.1. That's in hex.
Oh, really?
Right now. Yeah, it already got
hex docs
published. So
let's see if you're lying to me. Phoenix underscore live view.
Would I lie to you?
Phoenix under, let's try it again. Can I spell Phoenix live view? Question mark.
My God.
Yeah, this is cool, man. This is really cool. So when you sent this to me, or you said like, hey, I did this neat little table, and I think you sent me a screenshot or something. It reminded me a lot of the view docs. Like, this is something that you would see in the view docs. And that's something I always admired about Vue, was the guide in the documentation website was top notch. They always had these really neat diagrams or charts or whatever that, for me, something like a good visual, for me, a good visual really drives it home. I'm definitely a visual learner.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, like, the Phoenix LiveView docs are basically, the core of the docs is just one page that has everything on it, which is, first of all, not very great. But then you have to remember, like, Chris had to write all this before even releasing point one, and like by himself, basically. So I think there's going to be a lot of room for improvement. And obviously, you don't want to spend too much time on it because it's changing a lot, right? Mm-hmm. He keeps releasing, you know, one or two new releases per week, it seems like. So it's still really good, but it's also like just written by one person. And that's a huge time sink for anyone to spend time to get it right. So
I guess you know, Dockyard pays him. I don't remember what the percentage was, right? So he works a percentage of his time on open source stuff.
I think like 80%.
Yeah, like it was, I think it was like 70 or 80%, something around there. But even still, so you know, I've been doing a lot of documentation stuff recently too for Design Collective, and that is a huge time sink. It's a huge time sink. I've been doing lots of stuff with Intercom too, sort of like trying to automate messaging that we're doing and automate onboarding messages and stuff like that. And writing just takes a long time. And I'm trying to be really conscious of, hey, this is as important as having the feature written, like just having this help documentation and this thing here that I can share with people quickly. And the amount of time, like I said, you know, I always really admired the Vue docs, and I've said it a bunch of times, you know, on the show, but like how good I think the Elixir docs and the Phoenix docs and really like the Elixir ecosystem as a whole, like how good the docs are. I can't imagine how many hours they put into that stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I submitted the PR, there was just, Chris's only response was like a whole line of emoji, and it was basically just all hearts.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's awesome. That was, I mean,
it was nice.
Hey, thanks for doing that, because I'm definitely going to be referencing this chart at some point.
Yeah. I didn't want to like pat myself on the back, but it just felt good, you know? So I don't know. It was easy. I hope people get value out of it. That's the best you can hope for.
Yeah. I guess like in a similar vein, I've always wanted to do more open source stuff, and I just haven't, I've just been so busy that it's hard for me to have the energy off hours to do that. But a while back, there was an issue that popped open in the Elasticsearch Elixir repository, and that's what we use at DK for our Elasticsearch stuff. And I think I talked about this last episode, but with Ecto 3, they deprecated or removed the ability to use preloads in repo.stream, that is. And so there was an issue popped up and said, hey, we can't use preloads anymore. And so people were, when they're populating their indexes, they would stream it, because indexes are usually, you know, big things. And so they'd stream it with some preloads, and usually a search index will have, so like if you're indexing products, you want to index tags on products too. So that way you don't have a bunch of, if people are going to be searching them, then you could probably just simplify the data structure and put them right on the product that they belong to, right? So, you know, that's a lot of information you're going to have to stream. And so there was this conversation about like M+1s, all the stuff. And one of the solutions was, hey, you can just kind of, you can just sort of implement your own little, you know, cursor pagination. And they put a little example here. And that was cool. And they kept going and it kept going and it kept going. And then the timing was really funny. So I think it was last week I had talked about, you know, having to stream some stuff, and I found out how to use stream that chunk, basically chunking and chunking a stream into a chunk and preloading that chunk. And so a comment popped up in the repo and they're like, hey, I'm having trouble getting this going. Here's my attempt. And someone said, here's how I'm doing it. But what they're doing is they're using repo.stream and then using stream.map, and they were using map.put, and they were like hand putting a singular association in there. And of course that won't work with like has many's and stuff. So I just dropped my solution in with the chunk every and flat map. And then, that started like a chain. So people were like, oh, hey, this works great. And then, after that, somebody, put a neat little function they called stream preload right in their myapp.repo module, and I might actually steal this and use it. So that was kind of cool. I felt good because people were using this thing that I like labored over and arrived at, and it helped some people out directly.
Well, I think it's great because the issue is open December 2018, and there's a little activity, and then people are like occasionally check in April 2019. You know, here's how I'm doing it, blah blah blah. And then there's this flurry of activity.
Yeah.
When you as of 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And then eventually just got closed today. So I just love that thing just like bumped. You know, bumping a post in forums, it just got bumped right back to the top.
Yeah, exactly. And it's cool too. I wish that friend of the show, Katie Sherm, is in here. I wish he could benefit from this, but he's using Microsoft SQL or something or other that doesn't support streaming, or with the Ecto adapter doesn't support streaming. So he's kind of out of luck there. But yeah, it was cool. It was cool to see some people like, hey, this worked. Because I really, like the last 2 weeks for me have been really difficult. In having to level up on these different areas that I haven't really had experience in, and also, you know, solving these problems that they're not necessarily time sensitive, but I don't want to spend a lot of time on them because they're holding up features I think could be really beneficial to DK. So it felt good to kind of get over that hump. And then I think like the next day I was talking to a friend of the show, Brian, and then I was just mentioning to him, oh, this worked for me. And he was like, oh, we have a project that's kind of stalled out on Ecto 2 because we didn't solve the preloading thing yet. So then he used it. And then this, like a few days later, this comment pops up. So it's sort of, yeah, like you said, it was like nothing and then a flurry of activity. And the timing was cool because it was, I had just solved the problem.
That's great. That's a handy little snippet there. Added to the list of blog posts that we're going to blog about someday. Blog, yeah. On our weblog.
Yeah, somebody hit me up on LinkedIn 2 days ago, and they offered to take our episodes and turn them into small consumable pieces of content, and I just closed the chat window.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, we should be doing that. It's not really up for discussion, but...
Right. We'll follow up on that. We'll circle back. We'll circle back on that.
All right, we'll table it for now. Put it in the parking lot.
Right. So what else has been up? You've been contributing to open source and you're being a good open source citizen, giving back to the community.
It was like 1 hour. It was like 30 minutes on a Friday when I had an hour to kill.
Well, the other thing is like, I'm always seeing you in the Elixir Slack. It's like every time I go in there, you're helping somebody out.
Dude, I gotta like learn when to close that. It's a real problem. It's a real problem. Okay. I don't have a problem helping people. I don't have a problem like... It's just the fact that the Elixir Slack is right there next to my work Slack and the DK Slack and like all the, you know, work related Slack I'm in. And then there's this Elixir Slack, which is basically a social, like it's not, I don't have any obligation here. I even tried removing it from my Slack client and I thought, oh, I'll just open it when I want to. Nope. That lasted a day. I had to add it right back. Cause I like have to ask questions sometimes. Right.
Right.
But man, it's, when that little unread notifier is there, I can't, it's just a bad person. But yeah, I like helping people, but man, it's a real time sink sometimes. Although I learn a lot, you know, like I learn a lot by helping people and by teaching. And like when someone asks a question and I don't know, I like to look it up and try to help them if I think I can figure it out. Half the time I'm just posting links to hex docs because that's all it takes because the docs are so good.
Right.
But I was helping someone with LiveView stuff and we're going back and forth. And I'm like, maybe as we're stumbling our way through this, Chris will just chime in and be like, oh yeah, just do this. But it never happened.
I do see that sometimes.
LiveView is so new and there's not enough people that like know what's going on to help. So I try to do what I can, even though I also don't know what I'm doing. But what have I been doing? I don't know, man. It's just been I've just been burned out on, not burned out, just a mentally taxing day, jumping around, doing development, and then also maintenance stuff, trying to get new stations set up. I had this networking issue today where, like, we literally shipped a box of gear to a guy at a brand new station that we're going to bring in the network. We sent him, you know, a Ubiquiti router, all pre-configured with Cloud Key, so we can configure it remotely. We sent him, he had the radio ready, which is TCP based flex radio. We sent him a Mac Mini, and I don't know if it's like, in theory, you should just plug everything in, it should just show up, right? We installed the software on it, installed OpenVPN, so even if he doesn't have port forwarding set up correctly, we can just at least SSH into the Mini and figure out what's going on. Great. That was all great. We shipped in the box, we plug everything in, and this freaking radio was getting this weird IP address. It was like a 192.168.2 network, but it was getting like 192.168.88.something.
Huh.
I was like, what is .88? Where is that coming from? And then so I was like, okay, is DHCP or static and blah, 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 blah. No idea what was happening. Finally found some other piece of hardware on his network that was acting as a router and giving out IP addresses that had DHCP server on it. That was fun. So I had to go in and disable it remotely over SSH, over OpenVPN through an SSH tunnel.
Yeah, it's...
That took, that was a good 2 hours gone.
Right, yeah. I was just going to say, like, finding... So I recently spent probably a good 4 hours on a thing that I ended up figuring out. So I got stuck on it, like, late afternoon. And then I came back, I took a couple hours off. I came back after dinner to try and figure it out really quick, and I didn't. I went to sleep, couldn't sleep because I was thinking about it and the dog was kicking me. So they like compounded each other. And then I wake up and spend another 2 hours on it, and then I figured it out. So after I figured it out, I was like, okay, well, that's kind of obvious now in hindsight, but wasting those 4 hours was really, really frustrating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yesterday was a day like that for me where it's like I'm just literally banging my head against this. Maybe not literally. Literally is not the right word to use there. So I was close, though. But metaphorically banging my head against the desk, rolling my face on the keyboard.
Yeah. So when you run into a situation like that, do you document it anywhere? Do you have like a frequently asked questions for yourself anywhere that you would put down? Like, hey, next time if... Just remember to check this one-off edge case if this other thing is happening.
If I spend a lot of time, if it's one of those things where I've spent multiple hours and I have a Git diff that's like 3 lines, which is sometimes what happens, I will leave a big honking comment right above that explaining my thought process and why this is that way. That's my form of documentation for that primarily is leaving that breadcrumb trail so when I come back to it, I'll know why this is the way that it is.
So is that like, what about if it's not something necessarily code related? Like what if it's like something that's workflow related or process related or something like that?
It's a good question. If it's something that I need to recreate, like I know I'm going to need to do it again in the future, primarily things like when you're doing like a bunch of shell commands or setting up a server or like, setting up development tools, or like anything really requires like running lots of command and just jumping between different software and installing things. Like I will document the crap out of that kind of stuff. But otherwise they're kind of one-off. Like it's you're trying to solve a problem and I don't think it's always necessarily applicable to a different type of problem.
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, one thing I've been doing if I run into things like that is, I guess even if it's like work related, DK related. So we have everything in DK is in Notion, and so I have a junk drawer document that I just put stuff in. So I'll make a heading of the an umbrella of like this is the thing, and then I'll like kind of say, all right, here are the edge cases around it, and here's how I've solved it, and so. What I've been doing is as I run into stuff, I'll just check the junk drawer first and be like, have I run into this before? And do I have a snippet for it? Like the same way you might, like you said, you document a lot of stuff. I have a lot of code snippets in a Notion doc that's shared for the DK tech team. So things like importing a database into Docker, running specific commands against a Heroku application. Just different commands and stuff. I just put it in one Notion doc.
I like the idea of a drunk drawer. I like that idea too.
Junk drawer.
But a junk drawer. I would think I would call it like an inbox, right? Like if you're using like a getting things done.
Yeah, yeah.
GTD terminology. That's an inbox. That's like get it on paper and get it in there and then, you know, file it away later.
Yeah. So I used to, I think Paul back in like way back in the day, and this would have been, I don't know, years ago now, but I used to use this app called NV Alt, and that was my inbox for all things, anything. So, you could make new notes really quickly and just drop stuff in there. And so I had anything from like client credentials, like this is before I was even using 1Password. So I had stuff like client credentials in there when I was doing consulting, how to set up a PHP server or whatever, down to like, yeah, just, I would just throw whatever I needed to use at some point, at some day, throw it in there and just put tags on it. And
is this NV Ultra searchable, portable and multi markdown notes?
Yes.
Okay.
is NV notational velocity, I think is what it was made off of. So I might've just lied to you. But NV Alt is notational velocity with some additional features. So it's like someone forked it and added stuff to it.
I used to use a thing called before Notion or OneNote or anything was a thing. Does this still exist? Oh, it does still exist. TiddlyWiki. You ever heard of TiddlyWiki?
Yes.
Okay.
I have actually. Wow. It's been a long time since I've seen this.
Right.
This looks like Web 2.0. This is like...
I know. But the cool thing about TiddlyWiki is that I still don't know how this works, but somehow it's a single HTML file that you download, and then somehow by interacting with it, it saves... You run it... You open it in a browser, and you open it, but when you hit save, it saves to the HTML file itself. Like, the state is stored in there somehow, and like, some kind of database. So like, you can literally, you make your own wiki and it's a single file then it's real and you can edit it and you don't need an editor. Like, it blows my mind. I use this a lot in college for just like random, like you said, just random things I need to put down.
Yeah. So I did hear about this before from Twitter, Joe Armstrong, rest in peace. The co-inventor of Erlang, that guy, he was tweeting about it a while back and he was going all in on it. And I didn't really understand what he was talking about, but now it makes sense because he was kind of talking about what you were saying, like it does things in a certain way that you don't need all these extra dependencies and stuff. But yeah, that's how I found about it. Yeah, yeah.
I just threw up my Dropbox.
Wow, what a...
Does it still work?
What a different time.
Oh my God, it still does.
NVL.
These are...
NVL is, it's fast. It's just fast. It was good, man. It was just fast. It worked great.
All these notes are from like 2010.
Wait, you're looking at yours. It's like it still works right now, the one that you were using.
Yeah, it's the title is Computing Notebook because I can never remember what the hell I did last time.
Nice.
Serial numbers.
What were we talking about? Oh yeah, documentation. Yeah, yeah. I just use Notion now and I do that for DK. But so for example, was running into this issue, and a lot of it is not documenting previously. So when we split things from being one server rendered app to being a client and an API, we had to deal with the situation where we were server side rendering the app and we have to handle sessions at that point. So if it's client side, it's fine because you can just pull your token or your auth stuff, whatever, you can just pull it from local storage or wherever you put it, and build the app that way. But what happens if you want to actually render a page and the page should be rendered as if a user is logged in already? Well, then you have to have that information on the server side. So we use, it's called Express Session, because we're using Express under the hood, underneath Nuxt, to do server-side rendering. So we use Express Session, which actually stores stuff in Redis. And it's funny that our front-end app has a Redis dependency and our API doesn't at this point. But anyway, so there's like a lot of moving parts there. And we have to be able to have anonymous cards working, you know, so that's a whole thing. We have to obviously have sessions working, but also we have custom domains too. And so people can shop anonymously and sign in, sign up and stuff on custom domains as well. So that all has to work. And we got it working, but I screwed up and I never really made a document or a graph or a diagram of all the moving pieces. And I found a little bug in there and I was looking for, I was like, okay, where is this written down? And there was maybe like a paragraph about it in a junk drawer somewhere, but I was really kicking myself because I would have saved myself a lot of time if I had already had that done already. So that's one of the things I did today, actually, was sort of document and outline all that stuff.
And you end up fixing your bug, right?
Yes.
So was that, did you make the diagram as a, was that before or after you figured it out?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Yeah.
I was just wondering if that's part of the process.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a lot of different moving pieces. So like I was kind of reverse engineering it into a drawing on my iPad basically. And as I was going, I was just kind of dropping, you know, console logs around to see what was happening. And the other fun part is, having the front end hydrate and all that stuff. So you had the person signed in, if you have the session stuff on the server side render, then you have to hydrate it. So you have to like hand off certain things. So for example, if this person's an anonymous person and they have something in their shopping cart, well, then we have to set an order ID and a header that goes back. So when the clients are making requests to our API, there's, you know, the token if they're signed in, but also there's an order ID for anonymous people. And that's how we know how to tie certain orders to which sessions, right? And so we have to do the handoff kind of twice. So we have to do it when the server stuff is being rendered and then also when it's hydrated. So a lot of juggling happening, and the diagramming was really helpful. But again, I was kicking myself that I hadn't done it sooner.
You know, this would be a lot easier if it was just a traditional server rendered app.
I don't want to talk about
it. Why don't you just do that?
I want to talk about it.
Can we talk a little about Nuxt? Can we talk a little about Nuxt? Because
yeah.
I've been working on DK a little bit.
That's right.
And I'm trying to go fully integrated with my understanding of the stack, because I took a kind of deep dive into the Elixir end of things last week, building out contexts and schemas and migrations and even tests and GraphQL schemas and like everything I could do on the server to prevent myself from having to work on the front end is what I did. Like, I want to see if I can get as far as possible. So I literally got up to the point where I could create and enumerate things on GraphQL and go all the way through the system. That's great. And then I started diving into the Nuxt app, the front end app. And man, so here's the thing. So you turned me on to Nuxt in Vue.js at all, really. And I use Nuxt for remote ham radio, but I use it in a really non-traditional way, I think. I do it for single page app only, so no server-side rendering. And it's basically because my app is just one page. It's literally just one page and like a login page. Mm-hmm. I don't have any navigation or links or anything. It's all just components. But Nuxt, I still use Nuxt because it gave me that framework on which to build things like the the Vuex store and where to place components and yada yada, like all this other benefits of like having a application structure and config and all that stuff is just still really, really valuable, even if you just have one single page. But DK is not that. DK is like a full on, like it's the other side of the spectrum. It's universal server-side render, tons of pages, tons of components. Oh boy, there's a lot there. And I never really worked with Nuxt like that. I'm still in the mindset of everything's rendered and computed and done on the client, and jumping into this weird world where like you don't really know where your code is running when you're writing it is, I mean, you can know if you think about it for like 2 seconds, but when you're writing it, you're like, well, I guess this just runs at some point, you know? And
right. You have to get used to that idea. Yeah.
That it still seems broken. It still seems like you're abusing the meta, as they would say in like like video game parlance. Like you're taking all these tools and server-side JavaScript, you know, man, I don't know. It's great. It's insanely productive, right? I already was able to like write, use a form and create and list things and do all that stuff. And you know what? It didn't really feel that much different than just writing in a regular EEX, you know, or Rails template or Phoenix template or whatever, mm-hmm. which is to its testament. I mean, that's a good thing, because not only can you write components and templates and pages really easily, but then you get obviously all the really cool Vue interactive stuff there. It's all just right already there. So like, man, I'm really like mentally weighing this, I don't know, it's the pros and the cons. I mean, this is the way it is. It's not like it's going to change, but I was surprised that I felt that way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you mentioned earlier, wouldn't it just be easier if it were a regular server-side rendered application?
I mean, that was a joke.
Yeah,
I
get it, but it was like, it triggered something in my mind too, because I was thinking about it. I was like, yes, certainly some things would be easier like this, but also while Nuxt gives you, like you mentioned, it gives you sort of the organization, the convention, and it gives you some extra lifecycle hooks. You can literally build an app however you want to at that point, because it's just all JavaScript, right? So as long as you play by some of the rules, you can do whatever you want, which is strange to think about, I guess. But yeah, like you said, it's been really like insanely productive, because in my experience so far, Nuxt gives me what I need, and as long as I play by a few of the rules, which there's not really that many, it'll just work, and it does a lot for you, right? So we've talked about server-side rendering JavaScript. I've written about 0 lines of code to make that work. Hydration, I've written about 0 lines of code to make that work, you know. So it gets you really far pretty quickly. And I guess, like, getting used to... It's funny to hear you talk about that, because now I'm remembering how that was for me, and I hadn't thought about that in a long time, but trying to figure out... Oh, I'm console logging. Why is it not showing up in the browser? Oh, yeah, I have to go back to my terminal and look at it, you know, because it's happening on the server instead. And as it happens today, I updated Nuxt to 2.10. We're on 2.4. And I think in 2.8 or 2.9, they added a feature where they actually will log server-side logs into the browser console. And it's under an accordion, a little accordion or a fold, I guess you might call it. But they kind of put it in one spot for you, which is nice. But yeah, it's strange.
Yeah, that's really, really awesome. You don't know how many times I've already tried to do that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of other things that you run into. Like, you might pull in a library or dependency that relies on calling out to window or document. Well, that doesn't exist on the server. So if it gets included in a page that is being SSR'd, you're gonna have an issue. It's gonna blow up, because window is undefined. So that's why you end up seeing, I think now the tag is client only. So you can wrap stuff in a client only tag in your templates, and it won't try to SSR it at all.
Oh, instead of, what is it? No SSR, I think.
Yeah. No SSR was deprecated in between 2.4 and 2.9. It was deprecated. So that's a commit I made today, actually. But yeah, it's kind of strange to think about. Can I use window dot here to look at like the page that I'm on or the query params that are available and stuff like that? It's definitely sort of a weird and uncanny valley style world.
And especially something like Axios, which is basically like the standard HTTP querying library that pretty much is used by everyone as far as I know. And Axios works on the server and the client, mm-hmm, equally, right?
Yeah.
So like, you're calling a request, and for example, I don't know, you're loading query, you're loading a bunch of stuff from an API, whether it's REST or GraphQL or whatever. For the initial server-side render, that Axios thing is being, the request is literally coming from the server, right? A totally different even IP address. And then when your page loads and you click a link to another page, that next request is coming from your computer, right? At that point?
Yeah, it's...
Like, the fact that you can even have a cross-platform HTTP client like that that works is strange to me, too.
The Nuxt module for it's a godsend, too, because it handles integrating it into Nuxt, so you can just use this $Axios pretty much anywhere you need to. And or if you're in Vuex or anything like that, and you have access to the context object, you can just do app.axios and you're good to go, which is awesome.
Wait, can you access the context in Vuex?
Yeah, I think so. I don't have the code up right now, but I'm pretty sure you can do like app.axios inside of Vuex.
Man, I need to do some more reading.
So yeah, it handles all that stuff, and it has convenience helpers, so you can, like, if you need to set a authorization token, you can do this is maybe not the right method. I'll put this in the show notes, but you can do like this dot dollar sign Axios dot set token and pass it your token, and it'll set the header and make sure that it's sent on all the next requests for that instance and everything.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. I was going to mention too, even to throw it, to take it even more to the next level, making it weird and complicated. So our session routes, right? So we have the majority of the API requests that are happening in our Nuxt app are just going to our API endpoint or API server, right? Except for things like session stuff. So like signing in, signing out, adding to your cart and things like that. So it gets pretty wild because we're using Express on the server side. We register a few routes. So like signing in and signing up, like I said. And so in Nuxt, when you sign out, it sends a request to the local Express server, which then catches that, it basically redirects and sends a request to the API. If it signs up successfully, we catch that and then we delete the session in Redis and then it returns a response back. So we also have sort of like a middle ground. It's not even really a proxy server, but it's like we have to do some manual cleanup on our side, on the Express front end server side, before and after we talk to the API. So there are even some API requests going to like dk.com/whatever the route is instead of API to dk.com.
Man, you got to give me a deep dive on that because I still have trouble wrapping my head around
it. It was weird too.
I have everything running in my local box and I still don't really understand how the pieces all fit together.
Yeah, and when I talk about that, people are like, why? So why do you need Redis? That was something I talked to.
That's my next question. Yeah,
so that was like when I was integrating POW, I was describing to Dan how everything worked. He's like, why do you need Redis? I was like, because of SSR. That's the only reason.
Yeah, because I guess you need a common, I mean, why can't you just use Phoenix?
You mean cookies?
Redis is just a session store. It's just a data store, right?
Yeah.
Can't you just have it hit? I mean, Phoenix app is always running, whether you're hitting it from the server, from Express, or from the client, right?
Yeah, but also with custom domains, I'm not sure how that would work with custom domains.
Mm-hmm.
Because the custom domain app has its own Redis set up. So,
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about it.
So the answer is like maybe we don't need it, but
maybe you'll explain it to me and then I'll just, you know, have some way to tear it all down.
Right. Yeah.
But doubtful. I'm sure you've already thought about it.
But that's sort of, you know, you've been describing sort of like how it's not necessarily a paradigm shift, but it's just new stuff, right? New stuff that you hadn't had to think about yet or consider. There's a lot of that happening. And like I said, you know, thankful for Nuxt because it gives us a lot of rules that make it easy. So I always try to relate things back to Phoenix. So like plugs, for example, right? And, you know, I'm thankful that Nuxt sort of does the same thing with like they have modules and plugins. So they have a thing for pretty much anything you would need to do. They have something that's codified and rules that you should follow. So if you need to register a view plugin globally, you just use a Nuxt plugin. Or if you need to say like look at the query parameters and pull an affiliate code and store a cookie or something like that, you would just use a module. And so like for Nuxt, modules are akin to plugs basically. So I'm trying to, as I make changes to the Nuxt app, I'm trying to think about like how does Phoenix do it? It's just a layer of functions, right? Well, that's essentially what modules are in Nuxt. So I'm trying to approach things that way.
It's all functions, man.
It's all functions, yeah. Yep. So yeah, I'm sure you're going to find there's lots of things to refactor and clean up. Like you noticed, some of the DK like specific company admin dashboard stuff doesn't even use like async data, which is a pretty fundamental thing to Nuxt. And that was because those were largely copied and pasted. And they worked. So some of the like,
well, that's great that you could even do that though. Yeah.
So they're not server side rendered or anything, but like the crawlers never hit that, so it doesn't matter, you know. So
yeah, I was just like, okay, I got to open up these existing. Basically, I'm just learning by copying and pasting what's there because it's just simple CRUD stuff on the admin, like you said. And I'm like, oh, I'll just learn from what's there. And I'm like, oh, I got to learn this async data stuff. And I opened up one of the files. I'm like, where is it?
Yeah, it's
there. But there's no Nuxt here. This is just a view component.
Right. Yeah. Well, basically what happened was I cleared out a spot in the dumpster and you crawled in. And now we're both in the dumpster.
Oh, no.
That's one of my favorite pictures of all time, favorite memes of all time, is the possum in the dumpster, like, leave me my trash alone. Yeah, that's what it feels like.
You need higher self-esteem of yourself, Sean.
It works. People are using it, so I don't know. That's what I fall back on.
You're a dumpster possum.
Yeah, yeah. It's a dumpster. I feel like every app is a dumpster. Most apps are going to be a dumpster like that anyway. But yeah, I don't know. That's what, it's funny now because thinking about it, I wouldn't necessarily, I don't even, it's weird to say this too, but I've been programming, like Elixir, I feel like is my strongest language. I feel like I know Elixir the best and I'm the best at writing Elixir. I feel like I'm better at Elixir programmer than I am a JavaScript dev. And that's not something that I would ever like, being a backend developer, because I came to development through JavaScript and through jQuery and building themes and stuff, right? But now when I go into Nuxt land, I'm like, oh, this is different. This is not what I'm used to. And so that's why I keep relating stuff back to Phoenix and Plug, because it's a paradigm I know that works pretty well. And I understand it, and I understand how to build apps that way. So I'm trying to push that onto other places like Nuxt. And thankfully, Nuxt plays along pretty well there.
Yeah, you made a really good point earlier when you said that Nuxt gives you the, like, I feel like it gives you just enough structure, because most JavaScript applications, at least the ones that I've seen, and I'm not just talking about web apps, but really just any, like, there's no standardization for, like, folder names or entry points or file, you know, naming conventions. Like, there's the convention for JavaScript libraries in general, packages are just all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so it's nice to have, like I was able to just go into Nuxt and immediately dive in. At least I knew where things were. You know, I didn't know how they worked and fit together, but at least I knew where to find things. So that was nice. But you made the point that Nuxt gives you that structure, but then basically within that structure, you can just go hog wild, right? Yeah. You can do whatever you want. Because client-side, like, you need that. It's customer-facing, it's user-facing. Like, you need that ability to, like, do the dirty stuff to make something work or make it look good or make it interactive, or, you know, that's the point where you need to, like, make no compromises on the experience and just do what you need to do to, you know, get that done. So, like, the freedom to just do that and literally just have code running in the browser that you can just do whatever you want with, that's probably one of the most powerful things that it provides you, is just the freedom to do that. As long as you know, you don't even have to use the Nuxt conventions. I mean, sure, makes it a lot easier.
Right. Yeah.
But, and it makes, you know, makes certain things possible, like server side rendering. But Kevin actually posted, friend of the show, Kevin was, in our Slack today. Let me see if I can find the quote. He says, when I'm writing Elixir, I feel so productive, like a quote-unquote real developer. And when I'm writing Vue, I feel like a wizard doing cool things with UIs pretty easily. I found my happy stack.
That's great.
I thought that just summed it up nicely.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. Like, I feel productive in general, working on design collective things, refactoring aside and stuff I'm not happy with aside, right? Like, I was able to build an affiliate system for an e-commerce, a custom e-commerce platform inside of a week. And I'm just one person. On top of that, I spent half of my week on calls and writing documentation. So I feel really productive with it. I feel really good. And it's now just dawning on me, like I said, I keep trying to apply the plug philosophy or functions, or it's like a pipeline of functions to other things. And the way you described Nuxt just now, how it's like just enough structure, that's how I feel about Phoenix too, right? So it gives you the plumbing to interface with the outside world, but how you structure the inside world, the data layer of your application, is up to you. And I feel like Nuxt is, that's it, right? So, I mean, obviously they give you interfaces for Vuex. So if that's what you want your inside world to be, it doesn't have to be that. But that's essentially, it's very similar in philosophy, maybe, if I can even say that.
Oh, you said similar in philosophy. I was waiting for you to come up with a philosophy metaphor. Now I know what you mean.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm happy with my stack. I like it. Feels good.
Like you said, you wrote a affiliate system in under a week, and like literally the first time I had this client side application running, I added a whole bunch of stuff in a couple hours and had it working.
Right. I was sitting at my desk, and then I'm used to just me and the robots in the Slack channels, in the tech channels. It's just just me and the robots, right? And then a notification pops in. So I'm like, okay, well, what exception is it this time? Like, what JavaScript extension is it this time from Sentry? And it wasn't. It was a new branch in a PR. And I was like, what the heck? He just started touching stuff, and there's already, like, working code up there that I could pull down and use.
It's no secret, Sean. I'm just one of the robots.
We're all just the robots.
We're all just NPCs in someone else's RPG.
I don't know, man. I feel this talk was actually really beneficial for me because, like I said, the last 2 weeks have been really difficult for me. I've gotten stuck a few times on some problems, you know. So, like, working through that stuff has been really difficult. And it was good to be happy about what I have, be happy about what I'm working on, be happy about the decisions I've made. That was really nice. Felt good.
So when you're sitting down in the sun with your your solar yeah. panel and your no mosquitoes and your perfect temperature and your no humidity and your latte and your Breaking Bad on your iPad Pro.
To be fair, there are great white sharks like 50 yards from me when I'm down there.
Well, they're not coming up into the shaded
they might.
Picnic tables.
They might.
If they do, they'd probably just come up to you and be like, hey, I had this idea for an app.
I could trip and fall off the pier. Hitting that Pokemon gym up on the pier, I could trip and fall.
Oh, no. Beware of your surroundings, Sean. It tells you that every time you start the app.
Do not fall into the shark-infested waters. Yeah, I'm feeling pretty... I always feel very spoiled to be where I'm at and having the weather that I have and the freedom to work where I want to work.
Maybe there's a shark Pokemon that you can only get if you're down in the water with them.
I've got one. Well, I've not been in the water with Jamie. Has she's been in the water with the sharks, but she did a cave dive in South Africa a few years ago.
A shark's in a cave?
Cage dive.
Oh, okay. I said cave dive. I'm like, oh, cave dwelling sharks.
Yeah, she did two. She did two dives. So she did like a cage dive. So you know, like where the sharks are banging up against the cage, and then she did an open water one where you didn't know where the sharks were. You just knew they were there.
I'm sure they know that you're there too.
Yeah, they knew she was there. She couldn't see them. But yeah. Hope maybe we sold some more people on Nux this week.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've talked it up. Seems like we're always doing it. Well, we get so bogged down in what we're doing. Like you said, it's nice to take a step back and be thankful for what you got. Those early technology decisions that you made are really, really paying off.
Yeah. Yeah. They are. Feeling good about it. But I think that's all I've got for this week.
Yeah, that's all we got for a show that we had no show notes for when we started.
That's right. We're just both like, what are we going to talk about?
Always find a way.
Well,
podcasting finds a way.
Yeah, it finds a way. But yeah, if anyone's having any feedback, any questions, comments about Nuxt, comments about how we approach building apps with Nuxt or Phoenix for that matter, or questions about my crazy authentication setup, let me know. I'm happy to answer them.
I have some questions, but we'll take that offline. You can let us know on Twitter. Show Twitter is DNC Show. Sean is Sean Washbot, because he's also a robot in a room with a bunch of robots. And I'm Shrockwell. Not a robot. Maybe.
The show notes are going to be available at dnc.show. And pretty much everything we talked about today, different repositories, commits, stuff like that, the links are going to be in the show notes. So if you want to find something specifically that we mentioned, head on over to dnc.show and check those out.
Including that little snippet on repo stream chunk or chunks, whatever that was called.
Chunky streams.
Chunking your chunks. Chunky streams, like chunky bacon.
What's that? Was that just a Y, a throwback to Y?
It was.
That's awesome. Now I have to go back to the show notes and put that in there.
That's something that maybe Elixir's missing. The eccentric, what's the word? The person who like spearheads things.
Right.
Spec.fm/jobs. We'll post Spec, our podcast host. Spec Network has some job listings over there. Datadog, Reactor, engineering, product designer jobs. Go check them out. Oh my God, you do it every time.
And as always, thanks to Spec for having us and putting our show out into the world where you can hear it with your ears. And if you're looking for other design and developer-related podcasts, head on over to spec.fm to see everything they have to offer.
And if you're not hearing it with your ears, but you still hear us, please go see a doctor. week's episode Does Not Compute was edited by Mikhail Delport and produced by Sarah Jackson, who are both definitely not robots.
Mikhail Bot, I think he uses Mikhail Bot on Twitter. He might be a robot. I don't want to sign into Twitter.
Maybe that's his middle name. We did it, Sean. We went a whole episode without talking about Destiny.
Oh, I mean, I'm still rolling.
Yeah, I mean,
well, I have to
get some
back
on and play.
And then I might get on and I'll text you.
I think.
Then we can go to the moon.
Get back on. Go to the moon. Oh, you haven't done the story mission yet. Oh, I can't wait to do that with you.
All right. Yeah, I'll get some food and then I'll text you.
No spoilers. Don't spoil Destiny in the comments.
Spoiler, no spoiling.
Was that a Dora the Explorer reference?
Yeah, it was. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, I'll see you on the moon. Thanks again to Blumadora for sponsoring. Turn your flat application metrics into dimensional analysis with the industry's first and leading monitoring integration as a service. Go to blumadora.com/compute and you can get a $50 Amazon gift card for upgrading your monitoring with Bindplane.